They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Ahoy! Welcome aboard, listeners, stowaways, passengers, friends and family, men and women of all ages. You're listening to Magellan's at the Movies, the number one rated podcast amongst me and Nathan. Nathan, so the Minecraft movie, it's out right now. Everyone's loving it. Well, some people are loving it. It's raking in cash.
Yeah.
And it has started a trend of another trend of disrupting people's movie going experience. Apparently, there's a moment that I guess is of some import to Minecraft players where Jack Black says chicken jockey.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means, but that's like, that's a the cue for viewers to basically turn the theater into the Battle of Stalingrad, screaming, whooping, throwing stuff around, jumping onto each other's shoulders, throwing yourself into the aisle and just rolling around, basically making a complete fool of yourself. And it's hard for me to not be cynical about everything, but this specifically, because when I see clips of these, do you know what one of the things that I notice is common amongst all of these moments? Everyone's got their phone out. Everyone's recording themselves, recording each other. Even the people who don't have their phones out are clearly paying special attention to those who do. So it seems to me, and I don't like being cynical. I'm just forced into it. Because it seems to me that this is not an organic kind of overflowing of emotion, like, say, people cheering when Iron Man wins in Endgame. It seems to me like a lot of people jockeying for attention, but
jockeying.
Hey, Nathan, start screaming, start throwing things around. Nathan, what do you think about this? What do you think about this trend? Do you share my opinion? Do you think that this is just children being happy and that naturally makes me angry and sad?
Well, I think, and this is where I'm trying to be really careful about how much I sound like, you know, Clint Eastwood in Gran Turismo telling people to get off my lawn. The way people younger than me interact with cell phones is different from the way I interact with a cell phone, right? I did not get a cell phone until I was like a sophomore in high school, something like that. I want to say you got a cell phone at a similar point in your developmental and age sort of cycle and journey. So the way I interact with it is different, and I'm not on TikTok. I've never been on very many social medias. I'm on like Instagram, that's about it. So I sort of agree with you in the sense that when I see people behaving in a certain way and having their phones out, to me it speaks to a level of yeah, exactly what you said. Like, not a true outpouring of emotion, but more something that's being done for the bit or for a camera. And here's what I'll say. I think things done for bits or things done for the camera, that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. Like, if you want to go to the Minecraft movie and be boisterous and rowdy and have the cops called on you because you start a riot or something, because, right, you and your buddies think it would be fun and you go and do it, and maybe you film it because that's, right, a part of how you have fun these days. It's kind of like watching American Graffiti, that everyone's just driving around. What are they doing while they drive around? They're just driving around. Like, the activity involves driving around and just hanging out with your friends. And I think nowadays, a lot of the times, it's like, oh, we're going to hang out. Maybe we'll film something, right? Like, maybe we'll do something goofy and we'll take a video of it, which I think is fine. Here's what I think is interesting about the Minecraft movie is, firstly, the fact that all of this came about somewhat very early in the movie cycle. Like, this sort of yelling about things and having moments in a movie where the crowd does something is touchstones of, like, cult films, right? Like, The Room is very famous for having a lot of moments where if you go and see it in, like, a midnight screening, you would yell during it, or you'd throw spoon. I think there's a part where you are supposed to throw spoons at something. And the Minecraft movie is interesting because it did have kind of a ground swelling of this sort of cult behavior with the movie on release. I also think the Minecraft movie is interesting because I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it. The way I enjoy interacting with movies does not involve yelling or throwing things. For other people, maybe it does. But I talked to someone who did see it, and he said the movie kind of sucks, but the experience in the theater is really fun because everyone in the theater is kind of having a really good time with it, which I think is fascinating because I always find it interesting when a movie becomes inseparable from the experience of watching it, in the sense that, like, Tron Legacy, right, that we reviewed last week, a part of my enjoyment of Tron Legacy is tied to the fact that I saw it when I was a kid and I thought it was sick, and it's impossible for me to review it objectively because every time I'm like, well, the movie's kind of subpar, I'm like, but I really have a good time with it. And so the Minecraft movie seems to be a similar thing where he's like, yeah, when I think objectively about the movie, I'm like, yeah, the movie was kind of trash, but I had a really good time, and I had a really good time because of what was in the movie. So shouldn't the movie get points for that? I don't know. I find things like that interesting. But yeah, it's making a lot of money. People are allowed to go to the movies, and I think at this point, surely anyone going to the Minecraft movie has seen the news stories and is, like, prepared for it to be a non-traditional sort of viewing experience. In the first week, maybe you were just some mom trying to take your kid to a thing and you got trapped with 20 college students who were about to unleash hell when Jack Black said chicken jockey. That's kind of rude. I don't really love that. But at this point, I think everyone going is aware of the situation. Hopefully.
Really? So, like, we're just gonna say, oh, well, it's all right. You can just ruin it for everyone else. And well, now someone who, you know, a mom and her children who are not up for that are just out of luck. I disagree. I think it's just plain old, good old fashioned being inconsiderate. I return to the wicked thing that, like, yeah, it's you're just ruining it for everyone else.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, if someone goes to it and they have a bad time because of other people in the theater, that's legitimate. Although I also think at this point, again, it feels big enough, like there's enough discourse around the thing that I'm like, I don't know. I'd be kind of bummed if I was maybe out of town and then this weekend a bunch of my buddies were like, hey, let's go to the Minecraft movie and let's do all the Minecraft movie things, and then we get there and people are like, meh, you can't do that anymore because of this thing. I can understand both people being a little frustrated
because it's you're going to make other people upset, and you'll be like, oh, I wanted to make other people upset.
I don't think, you know, I think that's attributing malice where there is none. I think they're just trying to go and have a good time, and I don't know. I'm trying to play a bit of devil's advocate, although I do, again, like I said, that's not the way I enjoy going to the theaters. And so there was never any chance that I was going to go to the Minecraft movie, but that zero chance went to a negative chance as soon as I saw that I wouldn't be able to enjoy it in a way that I would want to.
Well, I think that that's bad. I don't see any reason to give people a pass here. Like it's just being inconsiderate. And maybe it's not malicious. Maybe it's just like you're ignorant of what constitutes considerate, polite behavior. I'm not sure that's much better. I think the thing about The Room is that everyone going to The Room nowadays understands and agrees to that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
But that's not true of the Minecraft movie.
I mean, yeah. I guess what I'm less concerned with, you know, someone goes and has a subpar experience at the Minecraft movie. I'm kind of like, you signed up for a subpar experience when you chose to go to a movie that definitely was going to suck. That's kind of on you. I think, here's where maybe I'll be a bit more on your side. I think if you're going to be throwing popcorn and stuff, you better stay until the end of the movie and, like, take that broom from the theater worker and be like, hey, I'll sweep this mess up. Like, if you're going to make a giant mess, I don't think I've ever seen anyone actually do this, but I would hope that you would be considerate enough to say, I'm going to stick around and help with this. Because, yeah, I've seen pictures of like theaters after a Minecraft movie showing, and it looks like someone dumped their entire giant bag of popcorn on the floor. And I mean, that is wildly inconsiderate of people who are not paid enough to have to deal with that sort of nonsense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, let's spare a thought for the 16-year-old making minimum wage who has to clean that theater in 15 minutes for
the next show. No kidding.
I should say, I'm not sure if you've been able to hear him, but I've got Shadow here with me. I'm at home right now,
so sick. If
you were thinking that I was just leaning up to the mic and sniffing rapidly and licking my lips very loudly, no, okay, that was Shadow, not me.
Funny. Yeah, the only other thing that I'm going to throw out banter-wise, and you don't have to banter about this at all, but I've started watching the new season of Black Mirror, which came out this week. I've watched the first two episodes, and I'm happy to report, and you should take my opinion with a giant grain of salt, because I have got to be one of the biggest Black Mirror, like, die-hard fans on the planet, because every time I see a negative review, I get a little huffy about it, that I'm like, I get the most pretentious I think I ever get about Black Mirror for some reason. But the first two episodes are super good. I'm continually impressed by Black Mirror's ability to come up with clever and novel ways of drawing out what I see as the idea of the show, which is not technology is bad, but it's humans are bad. Here's how the technology that we're working with and the society we're in is letting us be worse. It's letting us give in to our worst instincts, and it's creating an environment that is not conducive to people being their best selves, which I think is very compelling. And the new season, the first two episodes, I thought were really stellar, really interesting, just really, really compelling stuff.
I don't care about Black.
Yeah, see, it falls on deaf ears to Elliot.
I mean, did you hear what I just said? Obviously, I'm never going to resist a show about being crotchety, being angry, talking about what's wrong with the world these days. It's just not my cup of tea. I, I've I've accepted that it's not necessarily bad. There are episodes that I certainly don't enjoy for reasons beyond just it's not my cup of tea. But overall, I think it's just not my thing.
Well, I think we've spent more than enough time bantering here. Let's jump into the actual movie review. Elliot, you picked the movie, so take us down the road. What's the deal with this film?
All right. Well, this week we're talking Robert Zemeckis, we're talking cartoons, we're talking Who Framed Roger Rabbit. This is a 1988 comedy. Wikipedia says it's a fantasy comedy. I'm not 100% sure if I understand that. I guess just because it's not realistic. But anyway, directed by Robert Zemeckis, loosely based on Who Censored Robert Roger Rabbit by Gene Wolfe. I've never read this book, but it's nothing like the movie I've heard. This movie is beloved by a great many people. It's considered to be one of Robert Zemeckis' best films. It's groundbreaking for its mixture of live action and animation. If you didn't know, the concept of this movie, is that cartoons, like Golden Age Looney Tunes, Disney-style cartoons, coexist with humans, and they're out there. You've got cartoons looking the way they do, alongside live-action people. And basically, Roger Rabbit, a famous cartoon, is framed for murder.
Yep.
And the basic plot is that a man named Eddie Valiant, who hates tunes, that's what they're called, tunes, is hired, well, more like convinced to clear Roger Rabbit's name, get to the bottom of this big conspiracy, figure out what's going on, and along the way, enjoy a few pratfalls. So yeah, that's basically the movie. It's kind of noirish. It's kind of comedic. It's got a lot of stuff going on under the hood. This is a movie I have only seen, like, this is the, I think, only the second time I've watched it all the way through. Although I have seen it, I have seen pieces of it many times. This was a movie that I was actually very scared of as a child because I happened to see the, like, very end when, spoilers, this is a spoiler podcast if you didn't know, Judge Doom, great name by the way, when he becomes a toon and starts trying to kill Eddie, that just really scared me as a child. So, yeah. Nathan, what's going on with you in this movie? What's your relationship status with this movie?
Yeah, I don't know why you didn't watch all of the movie. I seem to remember us renting this film from Family Video when we were kids. I do remember you not enjoying Judge Doom. He's one of the classic instances of people citing movies from their childhood that kind of traumatized them or made them very scared of something. Judge Doom is a bit of a scary character. He kills, like, he straight up murders a shoe in front of the police. That shoe was completely innocent and seemingly
such a cute shoe as well.
Yeah, the shoe seemed to be fully sentient, and Judge Doom just straight up murders it in front of the police, and the police are like, yep, that checks out. We don't care about, you know, toon lives or whatever. Ridiculous. I don't understand how he got away with that. Or how he gets away with, in general, obviously looking like the villain of this movie. But yeah, I watched it.
You're under arrest for wearing a black coat and a hat.
And just his general demeanor is very disturbing. But yeah, we watched it when I was a little kid. I think we've mentioned on the podcast before that we were kind of Looney Tunes fans. We watched the, like, original Looney Tunes shorts when they would come on, like, Cartoon Network. We watched the Looney Tunes show, which I blame for the way I am somewhat, that I watched it and I was like, dude, Bugs Bunny is awesome. And now I watch it, I'm like, dang, he's kind of a jerk. But we weren't, like, I think Who Framed Roger Rabbit is kind of for people who grew up on these cartoons, which is obviously not us that much. I watched it again for some reason because it was on Disney Plus, and then I'm watching it now again for the podcast. I think in terms of my opening thoughts for the movie, I wrote very little for this film because I feel like a lot of the things that I said about Tron Legacy somewhat apply to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's kind of a silly premise in the same way that Tron Legacy is kind of a silly premise. The movie takes the premise, I don't know if it takes it super seriously. It, like, there's moments of kind of cartoon logic where a character survives something because something goofy happens, like when Eddie Valiant falls out of the building and he's just caught before he lands, which I guess makes him fine. That's not how physics work, but, you know, the movie is taking certainly the things, the stakes are serious or presented as serious. Like you said, it's kind of a noir-esque movie. I was really, I don't understand how this could be a children's movie. Eddie Valiant is like an alcoholic and like heavily drinking throughout most of the movie. The general, like, it has a classic sort of noir-esque storyline in the sense that Eddie is hired to see if someone's wife is cheating on them. That's a classic noir setup, that a husband is concerned about a wife or vice versa. And then it spirals out into a larger conspiracy concerning the, you know, kind of general state of the city and the people who have the most money and power in the city. So it's, I think much like Tron Legacy, it's a kind of silly idea that is taken seriously. It's better for it being taken seriously. And it's, I mean, well made. Like you said, it is... There's a lot of moments in this movie that are genuinely very, very impressive of like hand animation interacting with a real person or doing something with a real thing. It's, and it looks really good. There was maybe like two moments where I was like, oh, it's really obvious how they did that, or like that looks a little funny, but it is really, really well done. So those are kind of my opening thoughts on the movie before we dive in, before we continue with the review in a bit of a deeper sort of sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree that this movie is really carried by its premise. It's, if you'll cast your mind back to our episode reviewing the Simpsons movie, I said that very often Simpsons episodes are very often concept driven more than they are plot driven, meaning that you kind of have an initial hook where Homer gets fired, or Lisa needs braces, and or Homer gets inducted into a secret society or something. And then it's kind of just riffing on that idea, and there's not really a strong plot or character development or anything like that. And I think that I would describe Who Framed Roger Rabbit in a very similar way, that a lot of what's happening is kind of just looking for new and interesting ways to play out the idea of cartoons existing in real life spaces. And that's definitely entertaining. It's not particularly compelling or engaging. And ultimately, I think I kind of ended up thinking that the movie's a bit of a nothing burger. Or at least it's very superficial. There's not a lot of substance here. There's not a lot to really pull you in and keep you coming back. But I would say, because I watched this movie just last night, and I would say that I'm still very much, my ideas about the movie are still very much plastic. So I'm interested to see where things go.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree with you in some sense. Don't take my comparing this movie to Tron Legacy to mean it is of the exact same quality as Tron Legacy. I do think, like you said, the movie's best aspect is it's a novel concept and it's done really well. Like, the cartoons, again, the cartoons interacting with people and real things looks great. It's fun. There's a couple of times where the movie has what I think a very funny bit associated with it, like when Roger runs out of Arcade Maroon's office and he makes the classic cartoon, just the shape of himself through the window. That's a good gag. When Judge Doom is trying to draw out Roger Rabbit doing the shave and a haircut bit, the dun 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 dun, dun, that I guess Toons do that a lot. As well as the way in the final confrontation between Eddie and Judge Doom, the way Eddie defeats the weasels is a fun little bit, and the way Eddie defeats Judge Doom is also, you know, these are, the movie makes decent use of its premise. But looking past the premise, that's where the movie kind of falls apart in a way that I think Tron Legacy doesn't, or Tron Legacy has kind of a stronger premise and a stronger, you know, aesthetic to be running to. Because when you look at the real noir-esque story, it is not the most engaging thing and not the most interesting thing. Like I already said, Judge Doom is so clearly the villain as soon as he shows up that there's no elements of, like, the classic noir story works because the detective is confused and befuddled and having to detect things, right? Like, he's having to, he or she, I can't think of any noirs with a female protagonist, but he or she is having to, right, figure out who is behind things and figure out how things are connected. And there's some of that in this movie, in the sense that Judge Doom's eventual motivations have to be revealed, but it's not revealed through Eddie detecting anything. Judge Doom just, like, monologues his entire plan to him at the very end. And the movie kind of makes a vain attempt to try and paint Jessica Rabbit, Roger's wife, as...
Paint. Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. She's just drawn that way. They're trying to draw some conclusions here. Gosh, hey. I'm so funny. But they're trying to make it seem like she's involved in the conspiracy somehow. But again, the obviousness with which Judge Doom is the villain makes every attempt to put Jessica in the same category ridiculous. And it never... There's never a moment... I think even when I watched this as a kid, there was never a moment where I was like, oh yeah, Jessica's in on it. It's so clear that Jessica is just, you know, kind of dumb, and the movie is kind of poorly written in the sense that it does a very poor job of making what Jessica does seem believable in some sense. But I think that's where the movie falls apart more quickly than Tron Legacy. And I know we talked about some of the plot holes that exist in Tron Legacy, but the issue with those are just plot holes where we're like, oh, this is kind of silly. My issues with Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the central noir-esque story is not compelling or engaging. It's not making me wonder who's behind things as well. It's making me go, wow, this is a by-the-numbers sort of noir, and it's not even a very mysterious one.
Yeah, I think we're in a similar place, but for slightly different reasons here.
As usual. That
you were unconvinced by the movie's attempts to introduce suspicion, uncertainty, that kind of thing. I just never really cared. I wasn't convinced or unconvinced. I just wasn't really trying to figure things out because I was like, well, what does it matter? I mean, Eddie, Jessica, Roger, Judge Doom, they're all very one-dimensional characters. Eddie's whole thing of disliking Toons because his brother was killed by one. I mean, talk about you're by the numbers. Yeah. And I don't know what to say. Like, being sad about the loss of an unmet, unexplained, unseen figure in your life is just not compelling. Here comes Shadow. Hi, puppy. Yeah, I mean, I didn't care about Eddie's trauma. I didn't care about him overcoming alcoholism. I thought it was funny the way his arc kind of concludes with him pouring out the bottle. And I was like, wow, those kids in the 80s must have been, really they must moved. Have been, yeah, crying their eyes out. Like, oh, I should stop drinking too. Yeah, I think to the extent that the movie worked, it was because of the humor and just the concept, the artistry of combining these two very different visual styles at the time. I mean, the amount of work that must have gone into getting this all to line up, it must have been a pain in the butt. I was reading up on the movie before we started recording, and apparently, now I've forgotten the name. I think it was Terry Gilliam was offered the director's role for this movie and turned it down because he thought it was going to be too much work. And I mean, it was the apparently post-production took 14 months to wrap up on this movie. So that's the amount of work that went into this thing. And I respect that. And I think that it shines through and it makes the movie entertaining, but yeah, on a very superficial level. And it's really down to the characters. I just didn't really care about them. Honestly, Judge Doom was my favorite part of this movie just because, first of all, Christopher Lloyd, he's so good. He should be like a famous actor or something because he is absolutely understanding the assignment here. So he's chewing scenery. He's loving it. He's having a great time, and I was having a great time whenever he was on screen, although his last monologue where he just exposition dumps his plan, that was very boring, and I really wanted that scene to be over. So yeah, but did the characters do anything for you? Did you like any of them? Were you moved by any of them?
I would agree that Christopher Lloyd's Judge Doom is easily my favorite, again, because he feels the most like he's understanding the assignment. I've seen a lot of people talking. When we reviewed The Muppet Christmas Carol, I think when you're a talented actor and you're put in an interesting position acting-wise where you're having to act opposite a Muppet or act opposite someone who's going to be animated in post-production, you have different routes to kind of go. And in our review for The Muppet Christmas Carol, we talked about how great Michael Caine is because he treats it so seriously. Christopher Lloyd is another side of that coin that he does eventually be revealed to be a Toon. So he's even more understanding the assignment that his character is cartoonish. He's ridiculous. Joe Pesci as... That was Joe Pesci, right?
No, that was Bob Hoskins, wasn't
it? Bob Hoskins! I get him confused. That's my bad. I knew it was Bob Hoskins, because in my head I was like, it's the guy from the Mario movie. Yeah. yeah, Bob Hoskins. He's doing an okay job, but it's tough to tell what he's going for here, if he's trying to play it super straight, because there's moments where his character has to be goofy, which is hard to, like, it's hard to be the straight man if you're also the person who, like, is having to go through a bunch of silly antics to get the weasels to laugh so much that they die. Like, that's a silly thing. I think that's something that's very difficult to be the straight man through. So, but he's less good, and yeah, like you said, Eddie Valiant is such a classic cookie cutter sort of noir protagonist that typically what I find interesting about noir protagonists is seeing them try to, like, figure out the story, that they don't have to be super compelling, but I like following along as they do detecting. And Eddie Valiant does very little detecting in the movie. He has one scene where he, like, follows someone, but, like, for the rest of the movie, he's kind of just on the run and reacting to the things that happen. And then we have the other characters who are all kind of mediocre. There's Eddie Valiant's woman that he's kind of buddies with or whatever. She doesn't feel like she goes anywhere. I don't understand why she's in the movie. Roger Rabbit, frankly, kind of annoyed me. I didn't like Roger Rabbit. He gets better as the movie goes on, and his relationship or friendship with Eddie Valiant gets kind of stronger, and he starts doing less bits that I don't find funny. But I don't love Roger Rabbit. Jessica Rabbit is fine. She's kind of, again, it seems a little bit like a missed opportunity to me, because the femme fatale in noirs is such a classic archetype that it's interesting to me that they pretty much are just like, what if she's really attractive? And then they're like, what else does she do? We don't know. Like, that's pretty much the beginning and end of them coming up with a clever femme fatale sort of setup. Again, there's some weak attempts to try and convince us that she's involved with things, but there's never a moment where it's believable to me. So, yeah, most of the characters are kind of whatever. One of them is really fun, but I don't know. Really fun is a little strong. He's not even in it for that long, so, yeah.
Well, I agree. I think that Bob Hoskins was... He kind of got dealt a losing hand here. because everyone else in the cast is either a cartoon and so naturally bent towards a more exaggerated kind of, I don't know what I'm saying. My vocabulary is suffering. Or they're a human who is also just very exaggerated, like,
yeah.
Maroon and Acme. I thought it was cute to have Acme. I mean, that's... Do you remember, Nathan, Looney Tunes Back in Action? Which is a very similar conceit to this movie.
Vaguely, yeah.
It's a very similar conceit because it's a combination of animation and real life. I think Brendan Fraser was the main character.
Yep.
But in that movie, Acme is the primary antagonist, because if you've never seen a Looney Tunes cartoon, Acme is just kind of the company that makes all of the things.
The fake camera gun. Yeah. For your
camera gun, fool your friends, be popular. That's, I love that.
So funny. One of my favorite movie bits.
Yeah, so I thought it was cute to have Acme in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, he and Maroon and all of the human characters are doing this. They're not playing it straight. So to be the lone straight man in a sea of people who get to have more fun, I think it's just it's not a great situation. And I don't see any reason why they had to have Eddie like that, except for hewing to the tropes of the noir genre, which the movie is already, like we've said, kind of a poor approximation of a noir. So just just let Bob Hoskins have some fun with it. Just make him be less of a downer and let him be jumping around and doing funny voices and just like embrace the madness. That's what I would say. But they didn't do that, and so I think the movie suffers for it. I'm surprised to hear that you didn't like Roger Rabbit. I thought it was all right, to be honest. I liked all the performances, to be honest. Charles Fleischer, that's 100% sure. He voiced Roger Rabbit, and I thought he did a great job. He definitely was reminiscent of the cartoons of this era that I've seen. Christopher Lloyd, like we've said, everyone's doing a very good job. I thought that him, when Eddie is trying to saw off handcuffs by cutting directly towards his wrist, which I thought was a bad idea, Roger slips out and steadies the table and is like, does this help? I thought that was pretty funny. But speaking of the humor, I'm curious to know how the humor landed for you, because it's very, very pratfall focused, very slapstick, very much of the golden age cartoon sense of humor. I would say that it was kind of hit or miss for me, because sometimes I chuckled, but more often I would say I was thinking, yeah, this is just people being, this is just like people, just cartoons smashing through things, and I don't really find that particularly funny. But how did it land for you?
I think it was one of the better elements of the movie. I did find the movie reasonably funny. I enjoyed the comedy in the movie. I'm thinking of like the classic "No, I won't," yes, or "Drink it," "No, yes," "No, yes," "Yes," "No," yet the clap. Like,
I did enjoy that.
Flip, I liked that. When Eddie stepped down of the building and then looked down and he was like, "Oh, dang it, I shouldn't have looked," at the classic, you know, in a cartoon, you only fall when you look down. That's when you start to fall. So I liked those jokes. And like I already said, there's some fun parts of the movie where it's poking fun at the cartoon things. I really like the opening where it shows them filming, quote-unquote, a cartoon. I think it's kind of a fun way to start the movie. So I think in general the comedy did work for me, and I enjoyed it. I can't think of any jokes where I was like, gosh, that was a terrible joke, and I'm upset that I heard it. So I think overall the comedy was doing the most to keep me entertained and engaged with the movie.
Well, there's not a lot of jokes in the sense that there's not a lot of wordplay or observational humor. Like, it is mostly just slapstick of people getting hurt, people slipping and falling, having heavy things fall on their heads, stuff like that. So, I agree. I mean, it's serviceable. It, like the rest of the movie, it's entertaining on a very superficial level. But ultimately, like, even now, these few hours later, I'm struggling to think of things about the movie. I'm struggling to remember so much about it because it's just not all that memorable, despite having that hook, that a very memorable, unique conceit.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a ton else to say about the movie, so I'm ready to get into ratings if you are.
I feel like this is such a short episode.
Well, I do. I mean, I feel like I've said, and I think you've kind of talked me into a lower score than I was originally going to do. Because I think the more I think about it, I agree that the noir aspects are just so underbaked that it detracts from my enjoyment of the movie, and I can't really see myself ever picking this as a movie to watch with someone unless they were like really... I think it's interesting as like a novelty that it's like, wow, isn't it neat that they did this in the 80s, and isn't that kind of impressive and difficult? But it's hard to think of another... I wouldn't ever watch it because I'm like, man, it's so funny and enjoyable, and I'm doing a week of noir... I can think of so many noir movies I would pick before I would pick this movie, including the one I'm going to recommend, not to spoil anything, but... So yeah, I don't think it's a terrible movie, because I don't think there's anything in the movie that I'm like, wow, this is just straight up awful and bad. It's just kind of a mediocre movie. So for that reason, I'm going to have to go 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that it's a kid's movie from an era where making a kid's movie was just seen in kind of a different light, right? That these days, I think that in this time, in the 80s, making a kid's movie was seen as kind of imposing a hard limit on how dramatic or engaging or thought-provoking you could be. There's just a sense of, like, you don't need to try that hard when it comes to the script for a kid's movie. And obviously, a lot of kids' movies still get made that are utter mindless slop. But I don't think that you could have made a movie like Puss in Boots: The Last Wish in the 80s, because it would have been seen as... it would have been seen as too good to waste on children. So yeah, I'm sympathetic to the idea that this is a kid's movie, but we know from movies like The Last Wish that kid's movies can and do better than this. I really do appreciate the technical artistry on display here, and how much work it must have been to get this right, to get it so right. Like, they got it. Like you said, it's hard to find the seams on this thing.
Yeah.
Despite being made in the 80s. So I really appreciate that. I think it's entertaining on a very base level. But I agree. I can't really see myself ever watching this again. I'm going to give it a C-.
Wow. That's unfortunate. Well, let's get to recommendations. I'm going to recommend what I would call the great grandfather of noir movies. If you're talking noir, this is the one that you got to bring up. It's going to be Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. It is, I think, Who Framed Roger Rabbit owes a lot to this, besides Chinatown being maybe the most, like, iconic noir movie. The villain scheme in Chinatown and in Who Framed Roger Rabbit are similar enough that I think there's definitely some inspiration happening there. But it's, you know, if you've never heard of Chinatown, it follows Jack Nicholson as a detective who gets wrapped up in a larger conspiracy in LA. It features one of the most iconic final lines of all time in movie history, honestly, and I think it deserves all of the acclaim that it gets. It's a really fantastic script. It is really well put together. I think a lot of the times my issues with noir movies become that, like, everything is so murky and confusing that it's impossible to keep anything straight. And I think Chinatown is one of those movies where it's clear enough that you're able to follow the story, that you're able to follow who's doing what. But it also uses that murkiness to a very strong effect, where it's making this idea of, you know, the world is too dark and difficult and complicated for good people to make much of an impact. So at the end of the day, they have to just say, it's Chinatown. Like, forget it. It's whatever. And you could say, wow, Nathan, that's such a pretentious thing to say about the movie. That's how I feel, okay? That's what I think the movie is presenting. And I read an entire book about the making of Chinatown, so I'm kind of an expert. Not to brag. I read someone else's work on a thing. Speaking of, that's also, right. If you're like really into movies and you want a fantastic book, watch Chinatown, and then read, I think it's The Long Goodbye is what it's called, or maybe I'm thinking of something else. I'm going to let Elliot do his recommendation. I'll look it up and get the correct title to you, because it is a really fantastic read. But anyway, that's my recommendation.
Yeah, I'm afraid I can't second that. I do not really enjoy Chinatown. I actually have kind of similar issues with Chinatown that I do with Who Framed Roger Rabbit in terms of as a noir. I just don't think it's that interesting. But I'm going to tell you a movie that is interesting. My recommendation is going to be not necessarily for the noir aspects, but if you liked Who Framed Roger Rabbit for that mix of animation and live action, and crucially for its loving recreation of those golden age cartoon antics, my recommendation is going to be The Mask. This is a classic Jim Carrey movie where a cartoon-loving man gets a mask that essentially imbues him with the powers of cartoons. So there's a lot of cartoon gags, most of which I think really work. It's got a much simpler premise, and which I think allows its characters and really the whole movie to just breathe a little bit more and to for everyone to just have more fun with it, rather than there's no straight man in this movie. So everyone's got their chance to be wacky and wild and just let it run off. And this is golden age Jim Carrey, so before his shtick had really run out, this is Jim Carrey kind of at the height of his powers. And honestly, I think it works. I think it works really well. So that's my recommendation.
Well, I've actually never seen that movie, so I can't speak to it, but that's certainly a very strong recommendation, a very strong rec there. The book is called The Big Goodbye. The Long Goodbye is the
Big
Robert.
Goodbye.
Yeah, I don't know why it's called that, but very good movie. Very, if you want to get the joke in Barbie, where the guy says the Godfather is the like encapsulation of Robert Evans, or not Robert Evans, Robert, whatever. Of this one producer's like strategy in the 70s. The book talks about it extensively, so it's a very good
read.
Well,
yeah, I've never read that, and I'm never going to. But speaking of big goodbyes, it's time for us to say goodbye. It's time for us to say that life is hard and full of disappointments. It's time for us to say Happy Easter. If
that's true.
Well, I guess the episode's coming out today, so tomorrow's Easter. But Happy Easter Eve. Hopefully you get Easter Monday off, or you got Good Friday off. Here in America, we don't do that because we're just brutally secular like that.
Okay, all right. Anyway, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I said life is hard and full of disappointments.
Okay, great. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. We're sorry that it was a little delayed. We had travel things because we are celebrating Easter and stuff, and I have Easter Monday off.
Easter and stuff.
Because I asked for it off. But thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back next week. I'm really excited for the movie we're doing next week. I don't want to spoil it, but it's going to be really fun, really exciting episode coming up. So be sure to tune in then. And we hope you have a great week in between.